You're listening to the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA.
Hello, Eagles fans, and welcome to this week's edition of the Journey to the Draft podcast, presented by AAA. I'm Chris McPherson, and with me, as always, the illustrious Bo Wolf, and the man who knows the tape, breaks it down, spins it, and slaps it all around, Fran Duffy.
Something like that. I've never heard it put that way.
Yeah, you know what? Gotta put it a different way. Gotta be a hype man for you, Fran. If no one else is going to go bat for you, I will do it. Okay?
I appreciate it, man.
Guys, how's everything going?
All right. You look like you're sinking over there.
It's like Thanksgiving dinner, and you get the kids' table, and you get like the little chair, that like one chair that had to come from the basement because you have 15 people over at your house. Yeah, I got the lucky chair this week. So was it on purpose? Who got this for me, by the way?
I believe Michael Campanaro may have snuck in, put it in there because he knew that you were riding Bo about him in Wake Forest and decided just to slide it in there for you this week.
I didn't know.
It always comes back to Campanaro, doesn't it?
Always comes back to Campanaro. Speaking of which, Michael Campanaro, his father has apparently become a fan of Bo Wolf.
Well, I don't know about that, but I did get a notification from LinkedIn that I got a profile view from a Campanaro, a president of, I believe, Michael Campanaro LLC, something like that. So the word is out there that I am the Michael Campanaro hype man, and if there is a job to be had on the side for hyping
on the
Campanaro,
side, okay.
I will gladly accept it.
If anyone can do it, it would be you.
That's
certainly
right. I'm a Campanaro truther.
You know, Bo Wolf is so big time that he gets packages delivered to the office here. And we're going to bring out our producer, Brian Thomas, who is usually behind the scenes. I mean, this came in at some point, I believe, on Friday and had no clue what it was.
You guys going through my mail?
No, we would have opened it up and taken it apart if we were trying to actually go through it.
What is in this box?
Seriously.
I can tell you exactly what's in that box.
Okay.
When I went down to Florida, I played a little golf, and I'm not a good putter, but I look for a little magic. So I went to a Play It Again Sports, picked up two putters for $5. One of them had a little magic in it. But because I was flying back, I was unable to bring the putters on the plane, so I had the hotel ship it for me.
So for those of you, and I shouldn't even say just Eagles fans, because hopefully there's a lot of draft fans out there as well who are enjoying the program as well. We're going to have the great Charles Davis from the NFL Network. He and Daniel Jeremiah, a former Eagle scout, they did an outstanding segment on the Eagles and what they could do in the upcoming NFL draft, and we're going to discuss that with him, as well as some other prospects at a myriad of other positions. Speaking of positions, I think the first one that we'll talk about to kick off the show this week is wide receiver.
I'm not sure why.
No, don't know whatsoever. Fran did an outstanding job putting together the scouts notebook.
Thank you.
This week on what the what analysts look for when scouting the wide receiver position. What would you say was your biggest takeaway? Because that is a position where you do see a lot of teams use high round picks on players. And for whatever reason, as prolific as they were in college, they may pass the eye test, put up all these eye-popping stats. They don't quite fulfill that potential in the NFL.
I think one of the big takeaways was, you know, everyone, when you go to the combine, everyone wants to know what's the guy's 40 time. So what is it? What is he going to run? Is it in the 4.3s? Is it in the 4.4s? And I think in that piece, Greg Cosell put it best, is if you look at the top receivers in the NFL right now, very few of them you would say, oh, he's a burner. He's a guy that always takes the top off of defense. You know, it's not the 4.3, 4.4 guys that are translating to quality NFL success. So the importance of short area quickness over that long speed and, you know, the ability to separate at the top of your stem, you know, stick your foot in the ground and get the guy's hips turned and, you know, separate from the corner. So that was definitely one of the big things that you take, you know, when you look at those guys and say who translates to the NFL and who doesn't.
So the Eagles released wide receiver DeSean Jackson, and with that in mind, Eagles could possibly be looking now at wide receiver at number 22. Does that change the team's draft strategy at all, in your estimation?
I don't think it does. I think we've talked about it in weeks past, is that I think this team has set itself up to not have to go into the draft with any one position that we absolutely have to address with the 22nd pick or the 54th pick, and we need to come away with this guy. You know, we've seen, obviously, bringing back Jeremy Maclin, bringing back Riley Cooper, the trade for Darren Sproles, who is a guy you're going to move around and see split out wide in the slot at times. I don't think you have to take away, you know, a receiver at 22 or at 54.
Yeah, I think, I mean, just listening to Howie Roseman pound best player available as he has over the last couple of years, they're not going to waver from that strategy. But at the same time, he's said there's a good chance that at several rounds, there's going to be a wide receiver at the top of their draft board. That's just how stacked the position is in this draft this year. So I would be surprised if the Eagles do not end up with a receiver in maybe one of the first four rounds.
And it's not to say that they won't take one with 22.
Right. True.
But it makes them so they don't have to reach and take a guy just because they need a guy there. So I don't think we'll see that. I think they're going to go by the board and, you know, see who lands there.
Now, if they are to select a receiver at some point in the draft, friend, what are some of the characteristics that the Eagles might be looking for in a receiver? Will they find out someone who can flat out fly like Deshaun could? What kind of traits do you think that Chip Kelly would want in a receiver?
Well, at the combine, Chris, we got to hear from Howie Roseman at the combine, and he said there were four traits that they look for. That's hands, route running, the ability to create yards after catch, and then lastly, blocking on the perimeter. Not that's least important, but with the amount that the Eagles run the ball, you want to see guys be able to, you know, show that they can block and handle their own on the perimeter. So I think those are the four qualities. You know, I don't think you're going to eliminate guys just off those four, but that's where you can start. And there's a lot of players in this draft that, you know, fit at least three or four of those categories.
All right, so we'll delve into those with Charles Davis later on in the show. The other significant roster move the Eagles made also on Friday was adding quarterback Mark Sanchez. We delved into that in last week's show a little bit, but the Eagles have fortified the depth at the quarterback position behind Nick Foles as Sanchez will come in to battle Matt Barkley for the backup position. Does that take the Eagles out of a quarterback in the upcoming draft?
No, and I think we said this last week. It's the same thing. Now they don't feel like they have to take a quarterback at some point, but if there's a guy at the top of their board, there's no reason not to take him. It's not like, I mean, Mark Sanchez signed a one-year deal. It's not like you're committing to him for the future. So if you see a guy who can be you know, either a good backup or a good starter down the line, you take him, of course.
All right, so now we're going to go into our Draft Buzz segment. And Fran, you had mentioned Zach Ertz a little while ago, and Mark Eckel from NJ.com did a story where an AFC personnel exec, and this is one of those anonymous scout rip job pieces where they delve into numerous prospects, said that of all the tight ends in this year's draft class, if you were to put Zach Ertz in, Zach Ertz would be the number one tight end in this year's draft class. Fran, your take on that?
I mean, if you look at what Zach Ertz did last year, it's tough to argue that. I mean, obviously we see what he has become and what he will be in the future for this team. And, I mean, he's going to be one of the most relied upon targets in this passing game next year. You know, we saw him develop. Obviously he had, you know, one of the best set of hands in training camp last year, developed as a route runner, and his role expanded as the year went on. The last 8 to 10 weeks of the season, we saw him split out wide. We saw him in the slot. We saw him, you know, on the line of scrimmage. How he's used moving forward will be really fun to watch. And, you know, I'm going to take him just because I know what I've got in Zach Ertz. Easily I'll take him over any of these guys.
Also doesn't seem like that outrageous of a statement. He was the second tight end drafted last year, the second pick of the second round. It's not like you're really going out on a limb there.
Right.
And so it makes sense to me.
And we talked last year. There were times, you know,
some people thought he was higher than Eifert. Yeah.
That he was higher than Tyler Eifert, who ended up going in the latter stages of round one. So, I mean, I could absolutely see someone making that argument.
The flip to that, though, is Fran, for a sec, maybe talk about Eric Ebron, because I can envision a scenario where you get to 22 and he slides and he's on the board, and all of a sudden you've got the potential for a great two tight end offense working here.
Well, look, I've always talked about how I love the multiple tight end sets because it just gives, especially when you have two guys that are athletic and versatile and can do a number of different things, whether it's blocking or getting down the seam. You know, we have that here in Philadelphia already with Zach Ertz, Brent Celek, and James Casey. They would come out in the field sometimes last year with all three of those guys in the field. You didn't know if they were going to go five wide and spread you out on defense or if they're going to line everybody up inside and run it right up the gut. So, you know, obviously if Ebron's there, that's a discussion I would think that you're going to have. Is he's probably a little bit more athletic, and some people are, when you know, this gets thrown around, think it's crazy. I would say he's probably a little bit more athletic than Vernon Davis was coming out. Now, he doesn't have the deep speed that Vernon Davis does. He doesn't have the 40 time. But as far as lateral quickness and just fluid athletic movement, I think Ebron's probably a step above Vernon Davis and where he was coming out of Maryland.
Fran's going bold, everyone. Fran is going bold. Any of the other top prospects that you would put in that consideration if the Eagles were to
at 22.
Think about tight end 22?
I don't know that any of those other guys would be. I mean, I'm not going to say that they shouldn't be, but I don't know that they would be in the top 22 prospects in this draft.
Right.
Obviously, there's a lot of good players that, at the position there. I mean, you've got Jason Morrow out of Texas Tech who, you know, like Ertz last year, you know, mostly played in the slot. And I would say 99% of his snaps last year at Texas Tech were out of the slot. So you're going to have to teach him how to block in line, how to line up with his hand on the ground and attack defenders, defensive ends, and linebackers from inside. But I think unfairly he's kind of been attributed as a guy who's not a good blocker, and that's just not true. On the perimeter, he was great attacking defensive backs on the perimeter, coming down and cracking linebackers in the run game. So you just have to teach him how to play from in line. But you're talking about a guy who was an incredibly productive receiver as a junior last year, broke a bunch of different records there at Texas Tech. And you're going to just see how he's going to pan out. Austin Safarian Jenkins from Washington was another guy from that piece who kind of got ripped up a bit. But a really versatile kid. He's 6'6", 272 pounds, and he can run. So obviously he hasn't been able to test this spring because of a medical issue that was discovered at the combine. But as a guy who's versatile, has a lot of experience, came on the scene early as a true freshman at Washington. And, you would expect big things from that kid who's kind of built like a Kellen Winslow type player.
What do you guys think of those anonymous source pieces that come out every year during the draft? I mean, Fran, you and I were at the combine back in February, and Bob McGinn, you know, puts out the one every year where he ranks the top 50 players and puts them in different categories. And it's fascinating because everyone's reading it and everyone's trying to get that insight into it. But you might read one evaluation and there's three different takes. There'll be the one that's, you know, bet the farm on them, one that's, you know, kind of on the fence, and the other, it's like, stay as far away as you can. What do you guys think of those anonymous source pieces?
They're like mock drafts to me. It's fodder. It's nice to read. It's just sort of part of the pre-draft process, and it's fun to read that stuff. But in the end, it doesn't really matter or mean anything. I mean, mock drafts especially, you might get two picks right. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's more just for setting the scene for how things are going to go on draft day. And, you know, Nolan now Rocky trashing Cam Newton, stuff like that. Once they get to the NFL, that stuff doesn't matter.
I mean, it's fascinating for us on the outside because we don't have that access to those guys and to their coaches and to their strength coaches and to their families and to their neighborhood growing up. We don't have that access. So just getting a look at inside of what their character may be is fascinating for us. But obviously the teams, I mean, they're going off with their own research and what their scouts come back with. So, how much does it matter in the grand scheme of things? Probably not much, but it's fun for us because obviously it's a season of misinformation right now. So there's a lot of teams that have lots of different reasons, and agents have a lot of different reasons for putting different things out there. So, you know, without knowing, I don't know who Bob McGinn's sources are. I don't know who Mark Eccles' sources are. So,
well, the McGinn thing is different because he seems to sort of go to several. I mean, he gets multiple sources.
Right.
He's talking to several different scouts. He's sort of canvassing the landscape, and that's much more trustworthy, I think, as opposed to the single sourced stuff that like the Echo piece was, or you talk to one guy, you're getting one scout, you don't know what that guy's motivations are. He's probably trying to get people to fall to his team in the draft. So I like the McGinn stuff, that when he's talking to multiple people and sort of compiling a rankings, the single source stuff is more misinformation BS,
yeah,
to me.
And again, it's a fascinating thing to read at this point because, you know, at some points you're thinking, well, where there's smoke, there's fire, you know, and you wonder from, if you're hearing it from multiple sources, if multiple people are saying the same thing, you're wondering how much of it is really misinformation or, you know, is it the smoke, where there's smoke, there's fire situation. So, these pieces are fun to read, but in the end, I don't know how much they matter.
So it's also the time for reported draft visits of players who will be coming to the NovaCare Complex. Two players who have been noted out there in the media. One said so himself, Mike Evans, the wide receiver from Texas A&M, told NBC Sports that he will be visiting the Eagles. Felks, doesn't seem like Mike Evans will fall to number 22, but that doesn't preclude the Eagles or other teams from bringing in guys for potential visits just in case they fall, a la maybe Jerry Macklin back in 2009, or maybe down the road if the player becomes a free agent and you want to say at least we had some time. What's your take on the Mike Evans reported visit to the Eagles?
If he falls to 22, I mean, that's a scenario, yeah, where I feel I would run that one in too. So, obviously he's a big kid who could run. I think he's kind of been, the label of him being raw has been thrown out there, and I think that's unfair. I think he's you know, pretty polished as a route runner, understands how to set DBs up and, you know, get over the top and stack them. And, you know, obviously his time speed was in the mid 4.4s. So, I mean, you can't really question how well the guy runs. He showed at the combine and then again at his pro day that, you know, he's a pretty fluid mover, and on tape he showed off that way. So very, very intriguing prospect and a guy that's going to be high, I would imagine, on a number of team sports.
The other player, Florida's Jalen Watkins. Tim McManus reporting that he'll be visiting the Eagles. Defensive back, where does he fit in the NFL?
I like Watkins. We Bo and I had watched him down at the Senior Bowl.
Really good week.
He had a great week down there. And I remember early on when they were doing the press coverage drills, just the way that he was able to get his hands on receivers from the beginning part of the week on Tuesday through Thursday's practice. I mean, he was just shut down in those drills. And, you know, in one-on-one drills, he did really, really well as well on the outside. Really intriguing guy because he's got experience at corner, has experience at nickel inside, but also at safety. And he moved to safety this past year, his senior year, because they had Marcus Roberson, they had Lucius Purifoy, and they had a stud for true freshman for 2016 to keep an eye on for Vernon Hargreaves, the third from Florida. Was just a complete
never too
year.
Early.
Never too early. So, you know, between Hargreaves, Roberson, and Purifoy, they decided to move Watkins back to safety. They lost both their safeties last year in Elam and Josh Evans. So they had two holes back there. They moved Watkins back there, and he played well. So he's an intriguing guy that you can move around the defensive formation and play a number of roles.
One of my favorite days of the year always is when Fran comes in and decides, I'm tired of this draft class. I'm ready for the next year's draft class. It's usually about 3 weeks before the draft starts that Fran is just fed up with talking about guys he's been watching for a year. He wants to move on. How close are we to that point yet?
It's difficult this year because while the draft did move back,
there's so many juniors.
There's so many juniors. So you're always as far ahead. I felt like going into like the Shrine Game and the Senior Bowl that I was ahead. And then the list of juniors came out and it's deflating because you feel like you put in a lot of this work and then there's 100 more guys you got to watch.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you're still invested.
Yes, exactly. We got to keep you busy for a few extra weeks this year.
Listen, it's a process. It's a process.
And the other thing to note about Jalen Watkins, of course, is that he's Sammy Watkins' brother. So maybe the Eagles get a little information on Slam and Sammy, but, and that's good bloodlines as well. And then I think I did see one other report. They were going to bring in Taylor Hart from Oregon, which is an interesting one because you would imagine this is a guy they know a lot about.
Yeah.
Played for Chip. Played on that defensive line with Coach Az, but he's a good player, and you like him, right?
I love Taylor Hart. I actually watched him a little bit again this morning. You know, a big kid. He's never going to be. He's never going to be this like star pass rusher. He's probably never going to be a Pro Bowl player, but just a reliable run defending, high motor kid who's, you know, pretty athletic, can move around, can play a number of different roles. He would be a great fit on this team and any team that runs a 3-4. I think in a 4-3, you're probably looking at a Corey Wooten type of, you know, left end on a guy that would play as a base defensive end, but you know, really just an intriguing player. I like Taylor Hart a lot.
Corey Wooten always stands out to me because he spells his name so weird. That's always he's always
it's
just been a guy.
W two O's
two T's
and then two T's.
Yeah, it's so weird. That's the throw. That's the one. That
the second T really throws you off.
No doubt.
ESPN's Mel Kiper and Todd McShay put out their list of the riskiest prospects at each position. And before we delve into those guys, I believe it was Todd McShay who had this one, named Montana linebacker Jordan Tripp as the best under the radar back seven prospect in the entire draft. Fran, I will admit that I don't know anything about Mr. Tripp. What can you tell us about the Montana linebacker?
We saw him at the Senior Bowl. Was there something that you watched him down there that you kind of came away with?
No, but, you know, we watched him on tape together as well, and he's not bad. I mean, he seems like a reliable guy. He'd be an inside linebacker in this 3-4, I think we agree. But I'm not sure I was blown away by him, but he seems like a good under-the-radar prospect, a mid-round guy, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, he went to the combine and tore it up.
Yeah.
I mean, he finished with the top shuttle, the top three cone, was a top five 10-yard split, a top five vertical jump. Tested really, really well for those inside
and
linebackers.
That's not what jumped out on film, I remember. We were not blown away with his athleticism.
Yeah, I think he played pretty well sideline to sideline. I was a high motor guy. And obviously, you know, good tackler.
Right.
Showed the ability to get off blocks, used his hands well. So there were a lot of things to like. And, you know, you can compare him to a guy who probably has more fanfare, and that's, you know, Chris Borland from Wisconsin. Same kind of mold. Maybe a little bit smaller than Jordan Tripp is. But, you know, very just a high motor guy who, hey, if he checks out off the field, I mean, you're talking about a guy who can come in and make an early impact. But he's no Jordan Zumwalt. Let's just I'll just put that out there. That's my guy. Maybe I'll ask Charles Davis about him when we get him on in a little bit here.
So two of the risky prospects are two of the big name defensive guys and who've been linked to the Eagles in mock drafts at one point or another. One, Bradley Roby, the corner out of Ohio State, and linebacker Anthony Barr from UCLA. Why do you think these guys were named among the riskiest draft picks?
Well, Roby, because he had the what some say is a down junior year. You know, he I think he got a bad rap against Wisconsin. He was matched up against Jared Aberderis from Wisconsin the entire game. And Ohio State, I'll just real quickly, the Ohio State deployed their corners in a way that's kind of similar to the Eagles, where it was a left corner, right corner. For that game, they decided they were going to match up Roby one-on-one on Aberderis and move him around the formation. So, you know, he played in the slot very little from what I saw, not just from his junior tape, but his sophomore tape. And one of the plays where Aberderis got the best of him, Aberderis was a veteran in the slot, saw a lot of time there over his career at Wisconsin, just beat him off the line of scrimmage, stacked him, got over the top, and made him look bad. He beat him a couple times. But I think Roby, I mean, really is one of the most physically talented corners in this group. I mean, he's a big kid who can run. He's physical, can defend the, you know, can defend the running game as well as drop back and pass. You know, can play man, can play zone. A guy that you can really, you know, say has a high upside in this corner class.
And Barr, I think it's sort of we've talked about that. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, I think, or 3 weeks ago. It's sort of the people are rising on Khalil Mack, and so they're dropping Anthony Barr. They didn't see quite as much production as they were hoping for this season. But we agreed back then, at least, if he's somehow there at 22, you run the pick in, and you know, maybe he's a guy who you even think about trading up for if he falls to 15, 16 or so. He's a guy who you like a lot.
I mean, let's face it. 3 years ago, he was playing a role like James Casey. So, you know, so he's learning the linebacker position and learning how to play defense. So, you know, obviously you're projecting a bit when you look at Anthony Barr, but you look at a guy, and I talked about it a couple weeks ago when we first started discussing him, was there were some nuances to his game that I really, you know, picked up on that you don't typically see from guys that have little experience on the defensive side of the ball. The ability to be able to set the edge and flash color to the outside shoulder to force defenders inside in the run game. Obviously he's a dynamic athlete, and the ability to bend on the edge and, you know, great closing speed, high motor player. So really a guy that I think has a ton of upside. Is there risk there? Yeah, I would say there's probably risk there, but there's pretty high reward as well, I think.
There's risk with every pick.
No doubt.
No matter who you pick in this year's draft.
You talk about two of the quote-unquote safest players. And you know,
I know exactly where you're going here.
I'm sorry.
I already know where you're going.
I'm sorry, but last name Curry, first name Aaron from Wake Forest, was the fourth pick to Seattle a few years back and was out of the league now. So Jason Smith was another guy, too. It was a very similar thing. Was a second overall pick to the Rams out of Baylor. Didn't pan out.
Our guest on this week's Journey to Draft podcast, presented by AAA, is Charles Davis. And before we bring him on, he and Daniel Jeremiah had a segment on Path to the Draft where they examined the Eagles' draft options and where they might go with their picks in the first four rounds. And no, they don't have them taking Johnny Manziel at any point during that time. But who do they have them looking at? Let's check out the piece.
Time now to go inside the Philadelphia Eagles draft room, the NFC East champions of 2013. And Daniel Jeremiah, when we start with them on offense, I don't think they have a lot of big needs. We know that DeSean Jackson will no longer be with the team. So probably wide receiver would be a spot we would spotlight on the offensive side.
Yeah, we look at the offense here. Wide receiver we have highlighted in red. But the big thing they did last year, okay, they win the division. But I think even bigger than that, they identify their quarterback in Nick Foles. So I think you take that off the table. The receiver position, I don't think they need to do it at pick number 22 there, Charles. But I think maybe a player at pick number 54. And I'll look at Matthews from Vanderbilt.
Big Jordan Matthews.
All-time leading receiver in the SEC, a very productive player, and has that size that Chip Kelly covets at the receiver position.
And if you wanted to go a little bit deeper, if you get into 86 and 122, a Brandon Coleman, another big receiver from Rutgers, a Cody Hoffman from Brigham Young University, another monster guy. Chip Kelly seems to like those bigger players. That seems to be what he's going for. But let's leave the offense alone.
And they're in pretty good shape with Chip Kelly there. Right down there.
Let's go over to the defensive side of the football. And you see the stars here, you know, with the different guys who are big-time players, of Michael Kendricks, an inside linebacker. But back on the back end here, let's start on the defensive backs here. Cornerback, safety. Let's start at cornerback here.
Yeah, the cornerback position, I think you look there at pick number 22. What's going to be available for him? Is Darquez Denard going to be there when they pick? I don't know. I think that's a little bit iffy. Fuller from Virginia Tech, probably a really good chance of being there. He's somebody that was viewed kind of as a second-round pick, but then all of a sudden, with the way he's handled himself in the postseason, ran faster than people thought, I think he has a chance of being a legitimate option for them at pick number 22.
Yeah, another guy that might possibly be considered would be a Bradley Roby from Ohio State. And then we can go a little bit deeper into the draft. One of my personal favorites is Philip Gaines from Rice. If we want to get a little bit deeper into the 86 pick, Philip Gaines could go there. He could go right there. I really like him.
You can have him, but since you're going to take him there, I'm going to get my sleeper corner.
Get your guy in there, Baylor.
The former basketball player from Gonzaga. I'm going to get him at pick number 122. So we've got some corners now. How about the safety position?
Well, the safety position, they might very well get one of the top two corners at pick number 22. We're talking about between HaHa Clinton Dix from Alabama or Calvin Pryor from Louisville. Either one of those could possibly be there, and if so, they might run to the podium and put the card in for one of those guys. But if they have to go a little bit deeper, they want a ball-hawking safety. Terrence Brooks
from
Florida State is a guy who makes a lot of plays on the football, has nice range. He could go in there at a number 54. And now you got to take one last look here, one last position, outside linebacker. All right? If you're looking at what they have, they've got big-time players there, Connor Barwin on one side, Trent Cole on the other. But if you want to get into this draft, well, I'm thinking maybe second round, maybe a Trent Murphy from Stanford.
That makes some sense.
Another guy who fits what they're looking for in terms of long, angular, strong at the point of attack, rushes the passer at 15 sacks last year. We know they love Coney Ealy. They might very well talk about him at number 22.
I'm gonna do that right now. This might be the first time so far this year that we've given a player at every single spot here. So let's go ahead and give him Coney Ealy. Give him some size off the edge. Last year they signed Connor Barwin in free agency. Trent Cole played really well last year. But get another body, a young pass rusher, Coney Ealy off the edge. Could be a defensive fielder of this draft for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Now we welcome the outstanding co-host of that segment you just watched between NFL Network's Daniel Jeremiah and the illustrious Charles Davis. Charles, welcome to the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. You're on here with Chris McPherson, Bo Wolf, and Fran Duffy. And Charles, we wanted to get your take on the DeSean Jackson situation. From your standpoint, how important is chemistry in the locker room? You are an All-SEC defensive back at the University of Tennessee. How important is that, especially for a coach that's building a young program, one like Chip Kelly is here in Philadelphia?
You know, first of all, hello, guys, and thanks for having me. You know, chemistry is one of those words that is nebulous in a lot of ways. You're trying to figure it out. What exactly does that mean? Because different teams' chemistries, you know, have worked for them over the years, but they haven't all fit in the same box. Would you say the Oakland Raiders, the vintage Oakland Raiders, you know, the quarterback must go down and he must go down hard? Would we say that they had chemistry? The answer would be yes, but would it be the chemistry that your mom and dad taught you about?
No.
Okay? Not at all. Yet their chemistry worked very well for them. Okay? Would you look at, you know, let's say the Seattle Seahawks last year and their chemistry? You know, maybe a little bit different than the norm, but their chemistry was pretty darn good. I mean, that team worked together, very symbiotic relationship between offense, defense. You know, hey, offense, just don't screw it up. Defense, we'll take care of things, and then we'll give you a chance to make big plays. The Green Bay Packers of the 60s, the Steelers of the 70s, the Dolphins, the Cowboys, a couple of times. You know, pick your dynasty, pick your vintage, the Chicago Bears, the Monsters of the Midway. I remember a player from that time frame. I'm talking about the bad Chicago Bears or George Halas of the 40s, the 50s, that type of team. You know what he said about them? He said, the Bears hang out in places you wouldn't send your worst enemy to. That's a different type of chemistry, isn't it? So when we're trying to talk about what chemistry is, it's a different thing, but each coach has to define what feels good to him, what works for him, and how it affects his team the most. And right now, I think what Chip Kelly's saying is, for whatever reason, despite his accomplishments, DeSean Jackson doesn't fit into his model.
Now, Charles, obviously one of the major factors here is all offseason, Howie Roseman has not hid his infatuation with this year's draft class for wide receivers. He said that at every round there's probably going to be a wide receiver at the top of the Eagles' board. When you look at this draft class, is it as deep as you can remember?
It is. It really is. And that's saying something because I heard Howie talk about that. And I thought to myself, but it's been like that for a while. But the truth of the matter is, what it's been is been more receivers and a dearth of cover guys. You guys understand where I'm going with that, right?
Right.
Yes.
Maybe, you know, you guys have been locked in on a bunch of drafts. Think about in recent years if we came to you and said, hey, round five, give me a couple of receivers. You'd rattle them right off. You know, you'd look at your list, who was already off the board, bump, 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 bump. Give me some cover guys. Hey, man, I ran out about round three. Now we're getting more cover guys that are involved, which is great, but the receivers have really, whoosh. I think part of it is the underclassmen jumping into the draft this year. Would we have 90-something underclassmen jumping in?
That's right.
And so that helps swell the numbers. But just the way we're playing offense in college, the increased emphasis on offense, that means a lot of great guys who would be defensive backs are actually playing receiver in college now. In the past, in days gone by, we would have flipped them over and they would have played defense. It's just not happening now. People are trying to outscore people more than they're trying to stop them.
Charles, from what you gather from watching Chip Kelly's offenses at Oregon and following his transition to the NFL this past season, what is he looking for in a receiver? What kind of prospects would fit that type?
I think he likes players. We talked about this on Monday on Path to the Draft, and I think we had that segment with Brian Baldinger, Mike Mayock, too.
Plug.
I think you guys may have seen that. And those guys, you know, they hit on it as well. I think we all, in some way or form, but I think Baldy really locked down on it, where he talked about Chip likes those long type of ball players. You know, those you know, he didn't call them hybrids, but he liked those guys that you can do multiple things with, but bigger, longer, stronger type of players. That model fits well. So if you look at the receivers now that you've kept, all right, Macklin coming back off of injury, he fits that model. Riley Cooper fits that model. You know, I think Jeff Mail's on the roster, correct?
Yes.
Correct. You know, had him at Oregon. Jeff was a long, angular type of receiver. So if that's what we're talking about, I believe Chip looks at it and says and thinks to himself, I can get guys who can run fast, but I can also get big, tall guys who can run fast as well. So if that's what he's looking for, well, he came to the right draft this year, because whether or not he's going to have a shot at them, just think of the names that you're going to call early for receivers and think of how they fit that model. Kelvin Benjamin is a human erector set, right? Look at Mike Evans from Texas A&M. I mean, you know, we're talking about these guys who can get up and go. And then you're talking about guys maybe who aren't quite as fast but still fit that model. Marquise Lee plays faster than he ran at the 40 at USC. Very wiry type of a guy. A guy who's extremely elusive, in and out of breaks well, the whole deal. Jordan Matthews, we thought he couldn't run very well out of Vanderbilt, ran 4.46 at the combine. That helped him. But again, we're not thinking that he's a super sudden type of a player. You know, Adante Moncrief from Ole Miss fits that model very well, that you might get starting probably in the second round. You know, I mean, as we talked about with receivers, we could go on for a long time. I think Paul Richardson from Colorado can fly, and he's not tiny. So it's not a bunch of slot guys who beat you with quickness and speed. You got guys who are taller, stronger, and fast. A Devontae Adams, Fresno State, who's a big guy who can move into the slot as well. So I'll stop there for a number of guys now. We'll just keep advancing forward.
Well, Charles, because you are so plugged in with the Pac-12, I did want to ask you about some of those guys, Marquise Lee, Paul Richardson, and even Brandon Cooks, who's not that long guy, but he does have that speed that Chip Kelly could be looking for.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Cooks, I think, is one of those guys that when we left the combine, you know how we always talk about each thing ramps up into your overall evaluation? But let's just talk truth for a minute. We can get swayed by what we see right in front of us, can't we? I mean, let's just be honest about it. We always talk about, well, you know, it's the tape and it's this and it's that. Well, Brandon Cooks had plenty of great tape. But going into the combine, you guys helped me on this one, okay? Did you hear his name very often mentioned in the first round?
Not as much as now.
And then we left the combine. By the time he got done running and working out the combine, he was firmly in the first round, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I mean, now what everyone who made that move fell back on was, well, look at his tape. You know, yeah, okay. Well, you looked at his tape before. You know, you had to see it in front of you like that. Brandon Cooks, I think, was extremely polished at the combine. And then you watch his tape and you see how it translates. So, Cooks, you mentioned Richardson. Richardson can fly. We didn't get to see much of him. Why? Because Colorado wasn't very good. They weren't playing the marquee-type games. And when they played marquee opponents, it was usually odd times, and they got beat up early, and the game was over in a hurry. Yet he acquitted himself quite well coming back off of injury and playing with quarterbacking that was shaky at best. Remember, they started a transfer from Texas, benched him, went to a true freshman. That's not how your stats tend to go up as a receiver. That makes it tough. Then Marquise Lee, 2 years ago, we might have said he was at the head of the class of receivers, right? I mean, he was phenomenal, unbelievably dynamic, huge playmaker. last year dinged up a little bit. Quarterbacking was shaky for a while. By the time it got settled, he was starting to come back out of injury. I think the Oregon State game late in the season showed who he really was in terms of coming back and battling through. I think he played well in the bowl game. But all in all, not a vintage Marquise Lee season. But go back 2 years, Chip Kelly certainly remembers, because I called that game, that USC-Oregon game, when Oregon beat him 60-something to 40-something, whatever the score was, and Marquise Lee was like over 400 yards in total offense that night. So, I mean, you know what he can do, whether it's in the return game, catching the football, the whole deal. Plus, I think he grew up as a receiver, learned to play better without the football in his hand, meaning he would block better downfield, learned to be a better technician in route running. He had a youngster on his squad who came in as a running back and didn't know how to run routes at all and really dedicated himself to learning. And guess what? Marquise actually watched him go through the process, started to jump in and say, you know, I need to jump in on that too, and started to help define himself a little bit better as a receiver.
Charles, I wanted to ask you about another Pac-12 receiver, a guy who's kind of flying under the radar right now, but we got to see up close the Senior Bowl, and that's Shaq Evans from UCLA. What's your take on him?
Yeah, you know, well-built guy. You know, he's part of that group of receivers that I think of as running backs who are playing receiver. You know, Shaq Evans reminds me of that. Josh Huff at Oregon kind of hits that mold for me. You know, Kane Coulter from Northwestern, who's trying to become a receiver again, start his career as a receiver. He looks like he's built more like a running back. You know, even an Odell Beckham, Brandon Cooks are built a little bit more like that. Bruce Ellington from South Carolina, those types of guys who are strong build, used to running routes on the inside part of the field, but can run routes outside, kind of a versatile deal. I liked Shaq for a while. I thought it was interesting that during his career at UCLA, as he started to develop, you know, he and Brett Hundley coming on as a young quarterback, they started to hook up for bigger and bigger plays as time went on. And then at the Senior Bowl, I did ask one of the receivers coaches there who had caught his eye, and the first name that rolled off his tongue was Shaq Evans. He really liked him a bunch.
Fran's teasing me with the guy's name Shaq from the Pac-12 because he knows I'm a Shaq Richardson guy. But you were talking about more cover guys in this draft than maybe we've seen in years past. Do you see that mid-round depth? I know in that segment you guys had two corners going to the Eagles in the third and fourth round. Do you see value there in this draft?
I do. A lot more than I have in the past, guys. In the past, as I said before, you get me into somewhere in the third round, and you know, if it was a game show, you stumped me. I really didn't have great cover guys. You know, there weren't a ton of them, notwithstanding, obviously, getting a fifth-round gem like the Seattle Seahawks pulled with their number one guy. You don't get that with a Richard Sherman. You don't get that very often. But this year, if I'm talking about guys as I get out of the first round, you know, Shaq Richardson from Arizona, terrific pro day. I thought his production was excellent last season. I had him against Washington live. University of Washington, I thought he played a tremendous game that day against a very good receiving core and a good quarterback in Keith Price. I thought he was like that all year. You know, I watched him on film in a couple of other games. Let me throw some other names at you as you go in. Despite disappointing pro days and combines, Lucas Purefoy from Florida, Marcus Roberson from Florida are guys to keep an eye on. Jalen Watkins is a third corner from there that I think translates better as a safety, so I don't tend to put him in that conversation. I like him better in the back end than I do up there tight. Keith McGill is a monster corner, 6'3", 215 pounds. You know, everybody's looking for that Seattle-type model right now, which I'm kind of getting a kick out of. You know, oh, well, hey, they got the 6'3 guys. Let's go get a 6'3 guy.
Right.
They have 6'3 guys who can play. Make sure we know the distinction. Just because he's 6'3", you don't just throw him out there and all of a sudden he's a superstar. But Keith McGill has played out there. I think he's going to be a mid-round guy that people will keep an eye out for. A Terrence Mitchell from Oregon, another cover guy. You want another long guy, Stanley Jean Baptiste, although I think he's much more like a second-round pick out of Nebraska. But Marcus Joyner from Florida State gets a lot of attention. Again, a smaller corner who hits like a linebacker. I like him better, more like a Tyrann Mathieu type. Swing him back at safety and let him be a playmaker and a ball hawk. You want a couple surprises. Daniel Jeremiah and I locked in on one, and he's getting the claim credit for it, and I'm going to let him have it. That's Demetri Goodson for Baylor. I think he's a guy, a former basketball player, former point guard. He's a guy that I think you can get in later rounds. I think he will be a very good fit for someone. Phillip Gaines is a personal favorite of mine out of Rice. I think that he tested like crazy at the combine. Not many people know about him. I think if he wasn't at Rice in Conference USA, maybe he had more attention. But I like him. I like EJ Gaines at Missouri as well. I think he can play man coverage. He hasn't had to play much of it in recent years because Missouri hasn't done much of that. But I think that he can play it. I saw him do it a lot more as a sophomore. And Antoine Exum from Virginia Tech is a guy who's coming back off of injury, a bigger corner who potentially can go ahead and make that move. And Mike Mayock talked about Aaron Colvin yesterday, who, again, is a guy that I'm trying to figure out whether he's a corner or a safety. He played both in college, coming back off a knee injury. Probably won't be ready to go in the first part of the season next year, but could be a steal for someone come 2015 when he's ready to play again. So I could go on all day, guys, but there are a bunch of guys there. But I'm going to leave you one last name, Rashad Breeland, Clemson. He's a guy to keep an eye out for. He might be a second, third-round corner.
You keep just listing guys, and Fran keeps nodding his head. You're going one by one down his list of his favorite corners.
Well, good. Well, Fran, let me throw one more at you since you guys are in the Philadelphia area. It's not horribly far away from you. It's northeast. Have you gotten a chance to watch Kendall James from Maine yet on tape?
He's a guy I have not watched yet, but I see he's getting a lot of buzz now. I'm seeing his name thrown out there a lot in the media.
Wait. Charles has stumped the great Fran Duffy. Fran has not watched tape of this guy. That in itself.
I want to know who's been throwing his name out there, because Jeremiah and I were watching him, and we're like, we're all over this kid. We better get his name out. And we actually threw him out there on one of our shows. So we felt all great about it. Now we're upset other people are starting to mention him. But, Fran, check him out on tape and let me know what you think.
No, I'm going to check him out. There's a bunch of small school guys in this draft, and a couple guys that we saw at the Senior Bowl too, Lavelle Westbrooks at Georgia Southern and Walt Aikens down in Liberty. Both guys I thought played pretty well down there in Mobile.
Yeah, another guy that I plugged in recently and took a look at and is intriguing a little bit is a kid out of southeastern Louisiana named Todd Washington. So take a look at him and let me know what you think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm an Aikens guy. I like Aikens a lot.
I couldn't believe he wasn't invited to the combine.
He did a nice job at Senior Bowl, I thought.
He did.
I thought Aikens acquitted himself well. I thought that the kid out of we just mentioned his name.
Westbrooks.
Yeah, Westbrooks. I thought Westbrooks did fine, but that's not the one I was thinking about. It's about the kid out of Kansas, the small school out of Kansas.
Lindenwood.
Pierre Desir.
That's right.
Another guy that I didn't think the stage was too big for those guys.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was impressive to see them come out and do that. Because those two guys, Aiken maybe a little bit more than Desir, although both were highly recruited guys and for whatever reason couldn't get into, probably the schools of their choices. But I think Aiken was a bounce-back transfer. But
from Illinois, right?
Desir had always played at the smaller schools. Sometimes when you just come straight from smaller schools, sometimes it jumps a little bit bigger. The other guys, they had experience before. It's kind of like when we talk about Joe Flacco. Hey, we got Joe Flacco out of Delaware. Joe Flacco was a scholarship guy at Pitt. He just bounced back because he didn't win the starting job, but he bounced back to Delaware so he could play. And the funny part is, forevermore, everybody's going to say, now, why didn't he start at Pitt? Get him out at Pitt. And the answer is, Tyler Palko. And everyone's going to go, what? it's kind of one of those
noodle arm Tyler Palko.
College football, pro football, different things. And you know how it is when a coach trusts his quarterback? It's hard to get him off of that. And by the way, when everybody rips Tyler Palko, and trust me on this one, guys, I'm not sitting here saying that I thought Tyler Palko was a future All-Pro by any stretch.
But,
I wasn't a huge, big believer. But did he not take them to a conference championship and a BCS bowl game?
He did.
He certainly did. So you got to look at it in those terms. As a college football player, Tyler Palko had a nice career. Did I think he was going to be a pro or a good pro? The answer was no. In fact, I'm actually stunned the guy who started games in the NFL. But give him credit. He made it happen.
Our guest on this week's Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, Charles Davis from the NFL Network. Charles, one of the guys that you and Daniel Jeremiah talked about during your Eagles segment was Kyle Fuller of Virginia Tech. He's now number 2 on Mike Mayock's rankings of the top corners in this year's NFL draft. What's your take on Fuller as a possible target for the Eagles at number 22?
Well, it makes perfect sense because I think he's available there. But even better than that, he's a heck of a player. And, if Mike Mayock speaks, it's like the old commercial, you guys are probably too young for it. When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. But when Mike Mayock speaks, I listen, And Kyle Fuller is a guy I've watched tape on and have liked and have identified, and we all think he's a heck of a player. It doesn't take much to figure that part out. He's, again, much, much more in that mold of what we're trying to get to with the longer corners. Excellent production during his career. Will tackle, plays in the slot, can play out wide. Or wherever you want to put him, he can go do it. I like him a bunch. I think he's a really, really good player. I don't have him second in my rankings, but that doesn't matter. That's all across the board. Would I see him as a possibility at 22? Without a doubt. Would I be able to co-sign and say, yeah, I could see that as a legitimate pick? Without a doubt on that one. I think Justin Gilbert's the best corner in the draft. the kid out of Oklahoma State. I like Gilbert first, Denard second, and I would probably put Fuller third. But big deal. We're really splitting hairs, aren't we? Which about guys nowadays that you need three of those types just to get on the field and line up against NFL offenses, don't you?
Certainly that's the case. Where would you put Bradley Roby in the mix there?
You know, I'd have Bradley in my top five mix. I like him. I thought that he played better as the season went on. He really grabbed mine in the Big Ten championship game before he got hurt. I thought that he was equally as good that night as Darquez Denard. But they play a little bit different style. Roby's a little more off. Denard, obviously, is a press cover guy. But both of them played with extreme confidence that night, and not a lot happened in their areas that they didn't affect in a positive way for themselves and their defense. The thing with Roby is we're trying to get a couple things out of their mind. They're trying to get Wisconsin out of their mind when Jared Aberderis had a big day against it, 200-something yards catching the ball, double-digit catches. You know, they're trying to get out of their mind how the season started where he didn't look interested. I think it was an NFL hangover because, you know, he contemplated coming out last year, guys. And if he had, a lot of people were talking about maybe a first-round guy. Family talked him into going back to school. And I think while he openly said, hey, this is the right thing to do, you know how it is, guys?
He didn't believe it.
Gone. They got money in their pockets. They're driving new cars. And I think it took a
little while. It is Ohio State we're talking about, Charles.
Yeah. But even so, you've got to care about how you're spending it, okay?
All that means is he got some tattoos. That's all that means.
You know? Look, he didn't want to sell his gold pants. All right? that'll get people upset. But I think the truth of the matter is he had to work through that a little bit. Plus, remember, he got in trouble in the offseason, so he didn't start. He didn't play in the opener. Didn't start the second game, then came into the game. And sometimes it takes a little while to get your motor started. I had him against Cal early in the season. Wasn't one of his better nights, but I did think he got better as the season went on. And I'd have him definitely in my top five mix. One of my favorites is a Smurf, and it's Jason Verrett, TCU. And most people will downgrade it for being 5'10", 180 pounds. I watch a guy cover everybody. Now, here's what I have to throw out there, okay, for full disclosure. I was all over Alphonso Smith out of Wake Forest.
That's my guy, Charles. I'm a Wake Forest guy. You're going right up my alley here.
Okay. And that didn't go so well for us.
But he did have the one nice Carlton touchdown dance. That was good.
He did that.
That's all he had.
He has that, and then we can probably see it every morning on TBS when they run the reruns of The Fresh Prince.
But, that's right.
That didn't go so well. And so from that time on, all my friends have been like, hey, man, you break it off those Smurf corners, man. You're all over them, and then it eventually catches up with you. Well, I'm going all in again one more time with Jason Verrett. I think he'll be better playing in the slot than he would be outside, although I think he can do it. But you plug in his tape and watch how many plays he makes on the football when they throw it in his area. I mean, I think he's something else.
Charles, you were gracious enough to join us for our Scouts Notebook series that's gone on throughout the spring here on the site. And one of the things you said when we talked about cornerbacks was you wanted them to have a short memory in a sense, but maybe in a different way than most people talk about. Could you just kind of expand on how, you know, you want them to remember some of those bad plays and those bad games and learn from them?
Yeah, I think, you know, most of the time we always do it. It's a thing we fall on as announcers, and it's a cliche, and cliches happen for a reason because, for the most part, they turn out to be true. What do we always say about cornerbacks? They must have short memories because eventually they're going to get burned in coverage, and you got to throw it out and come back and play the next play and keep going from there. I've never been a full believer in that. I've always been a believer in, yeah, you have a short memory, you got to let it go, move on to the next play. But to me, it's file it away. Why did I get beat on that play? What did I do wrong to make that play happen? Did I peek in the backfield when I wasn't supposed to? Did I not lock in on the proper coverage? Was my technique off? All of that. Learn from it, compartmentalize it, keep moving forward, but don't forget why it happened. I mean, for God's sake, when we were in school, one of the first quotes we learned when they started thinking we were smart enough to retain stuff was George Santayana. What was that great quote? Those who forget the mistakes of history are doomed to repeat them. Well, that kind of goes against the grain of throw it out. We can just throw it out. Because guess what? We say just throw it out. You know what we're doing in film the very next day when we're watching film with the coaches? They're all over that error you just made and why it happened and why it shouldn't happen again. So I've never been a big, huge believer in it. You just throw it out. Don't just throw it out. Learn from it, compartmentalize it, let it go to that extent, but then figure out why you won't let it happen again. I hope that makes sense.
Sure does. Charles, quickly switching to safety, it was interesting that you said you saw Jalen Watkins more as a safety. He's reportedly coming to visit the Eagles, but obviously safety always a position of focus in Philadelphia. And at 22, it seems like it's the two guys are Clinton Dix and Calvin Pryor. Where do you come down on which guy is a better future prospect?
I'm more of a Clinton Dix fan. I think he's quicker. You know, I think he can do all the things that Pryor can do. He's not the same striking hitter Pryor is. Pryor absolutely explodes through people. I mean, I think there was a stretch last year, was it three straight games where he laid a hit on a receiver and the receiver didn't return? I mean, this guy will run right through you. But I think that Clinton Dix is a quicker guy, a faster guy, covers more ground and range, much more of a center fielder type. People question man coverage skills. I don't question him to the same extent. I think he has that in him. In Alabama, they don't ask you to do a lot of that. They play a lot more zone, face the quarterback, come up and make plays. I think he can do everything you're looking for and a little bit better ball hawk. If you're looking for a guy who's an absolute hammer, Pryor's your guy. You know, I just think that Clinton Dix is a little more of a rangy guy, and that's what I'm looking for a little bit more in today's football. But again, we're really talking about a hair's difference between the two. Both of them can flat out play. I think one of them may be available then, but I'm not sure both of them are available. But if one of them is, it wouldn't shock me at all for Philadelphia to just, you know, take off and start sprinting towards the podium and say, here you go. Put it in. Call it. Right. Let's go.
Charles, the last guy I wanted to ask you about was another safety, and he got a lot of buzz when he first declared, but really has kind of fallen off, I think, in the public eye, and that's Deion Bailey out of Southern Cal. You know, he's a Swiss Army knife for that defense, played linebacker, played some safety, played a lot in the slot this year. What do you think of Bailey?
I really liked him going into this process. I keep hearing injury reports. Mm. You know, Deion played with a few injuries along the way. I keep hearing things of that nature. Not quite as fluid as a safety as you know, the things that you looked at super fluid as a linebacker at 210 pounds, maybe not quite as fluid as a safety, although I'm a fan. I like him. I've got to get more details on this injury thing I keep hearing because you're right, guys. His name never comes up now. It's almost like people have taken him in and moved him to a whole different pile, and that's kind of surprising to me because I think he's too talented to do that. I've been a big Deion Bailey fan for a while, and I always thought the safety was a better spot for him. That, you know, I didn't see him gain any weight in the first 2 years at USC. You know, each year he was about the same willowy guy playing linebacker, and I thought that even with the way the game's playing in the NFL, that's not enough heft to hold up and play linebacker, or, you know, in the league, not as a full-time basis. So I always thought him being able to swing back to safety a la Thomas Davis when he was at Georgia would work out better. Thomas Davis had a much bigger frame and ended up being a linebacker instead of a safety.
Charles Davis, thank you very much for joining us here on our Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Fans, you can check out more of Charles' work on the NFL Network, and you can follow him on Twitter at CFD22 as well. Charles, thank you so very much.
Hey, thank you, guys. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and I look forward to hearing more from you as we go on. Let me know when I'm way off, okay? I need all the help I can get.
No, man, great insight.
As long as you're in on Alphonso Smith, you're all right with me.
Yeah, you and I, we're going down with that ship, aren't we?
Thanks,
Michael
Charles.
Campanero this year, Charles.
There you go.
Oh, hey, listen, I'm big on Campanero. You know the weird part is with him? You know the biggest thing he's going to have to refine is route running.
Yeah.
He was such a freelancer there and found a way to get open. You would think with the stereotype, route running would be a strength of his, right?
Exactly.
It's not. That's the weirdest thing, you know. So I love when we can break stereotypes. Not good for him, but it's good for us. Hey, look, the white slot receiver. Right. Not a good route runner. What?
Exactly. Well, he had, you know, he did have to worry about catching passes from Tanner Price. You never knew where they were going to go.
He never knew where they were going. But I like Campanero. That's a tough kid who's had some freak injuries, and that might cost him a round or two. But I think whoever gets him, we have a hard time cutting him.
All right, appreciate it, Charles.
You just made Bo's week, okay?
That's right.
Bo is going to be on cloud nine the rest of the week because of this.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for the full report later on when I find about Kendall James and the rest of these guys.
That's right.
I'll get back to you, Charles. I appreciate it.
Look forward to it. You guys be good.
Take care, Charles.
Thanks, Charles.
Bye-bye.
Great stuff there from Charles. It's time for our final segment on this week's edition of Journey to the Draft presented by AAA, and it's The Pick is In. So basically what we did this morning was we went out on Twitter and asked, in light of the DeSean Jackson situation, do you think this means the Eagles will take a receiver at number 22? Should they, or should they go in a different direction? And we got a live reaction from you fans on Twitter. The reaction was mixed, and let's go through some of the responses. An interesting one with the reports that Deshaun is headed to Washington. At Ballin' for Life 3 says that cornerback should be the top priority now for the Eagles. Obviously, the Eagles, they have Bradley Fletcher, Kerry Williams, they signed Nolan Carroll, and they have Brandon Boykin coming off his amazing 2013 campaign. But he thinks that cornerback should be the top target with Deshaun staying in the division. Guys, your take on, I know that there have been teams in the past that built their rosters to compete in the division because you have so many of those interdivision games. What's your take on saying, well, let's focus on winning the NFC East games and build our roster to make sure that they beat Washington, the Giants, and the Cowboys?
Well, first of all, do you think Ballin' for Life 1 and 2 were already taken?
Probably.
It must have been. Okay. You know,
could be lucky. Could be lucky number. Could be favorite number.
Sure. Absolutely. I prefer to do my balling on a day-to-day basis. I don't want to look all the way forward to the rest of my life. But as for your question, Chris, I think it, you know, this is so repetitive, and we're going to say the same thing every time, but it goes back again to best available player. I don't think you plan your draft based on what the other teams in the division have, because what if Dez Bryant breaks his leg or something like that? All of a sudden, maybe the need for a corner is not so great. I think you stick to your draft board. That's boring, but that's the process, and I think you stick to the process.
Years worth of work goes into, and exactly. Thousands of man hours go into draft weekend. So to go off of that, I think is not the way you want to handle it. So I think, sticking to your board, taking the guy who's the best value at that position is the way to go.
So, fellas, I think outstanding stuff. Good stuff. Another edition.
Not the worst.
No.
The best the of the worst.
But this was the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. The boys will be back next week. I will not. I am on vacation. I should be on vacation now, but because I love you guys in this program so much, I sacrificed the first day.
Just why don't you tell us where you're going? Tough.
My brother Kyle is getting married this weekend in Orlando. So my two boys.
Orlando.
My two boys are in the wedding, as am I. And then we're spending the week doing all the theme parks. A little Disney, a little Universal, which I've never been to.
Really?
And Legoland.
And as I told you before, shout out to Fantasia Gardens. Best mini golf in the world.
See, I don't think the boys, they're 6 and 4, not time for
you
mini
should
golf
bring
yet.
Just you don't even need the package. Just keep the
I've
box.
Got the putter.
You've got the putter.
We got the putter here already. That's so. Right. I'm actually dreading the drive more than anything else.
You're driving.
Driving. Leave on Wednesday.
I don't blame you for coming in and sparing that for another day.
No,
are your kids big on are we there yet? Are we there yet? What do they got?
I've never done this long a trip.
Oh, so this is maiden voyage.
Is the longest.
Oh wow.
Do you guys sing? Do you guys sing in the car?
What no, are they? What kind of like are they? Do they have things to play with back
there's
there?
There's movies.
Okay, so you got like handheld or like playing?
No, there's the minivan's got the DVD player. They've got tablets for games.
Okay.
They've got tables of draw. I mean, we've tried to come up with as foolproof
tables.
A plan. Yeah, it's like a little
like a handheld, like desk. On your lap.
Yeah.
Okay.
We
nice.
Should get one of these. We should borrow C-Mac's car for when we go down to the Senior Bowl. I can just sit in the back seat and just watch tape the whole way down.
That's right.
I like it. That's definitely the way we're getting to the Shrine Game next
so
year.
I would put on the Princess Bride instead or something like that.
You put on a movie probably that all of a sudden would be coming back and my wife puts on the car. What movie is that?
My name is Inigo Montoya.
That's right. <You're my father.
laughs> So unfortunately, I won't be here next week, but any plans on the guests? I know you've been working.
Up in the air right now. We're going to see. It'll be, okay. I'm going to hope Brian Baldinger will be able to join us in studio, maybe take your spot. So, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll see.
Certainly. I'll definitely be listening to say the least, and hopefully that you guys will download as well. So once again, thank you very much for joining us here on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA.